Hello, fellow Egypts. Welcome to Taranoia. So welcome. Hello. How are you? Today's episode of Taranoia is brought to you by Snorgurt. Snorgurt, the yogurt that you snort. Because let's face it, in today's busy lifestyle, who has time for spoons? Snorgurt, delicious, creamy, powdery when you need it. Just stick it on up your nostrils and off you go to school or to work as the busy person that you are. Snorgurt, cooling, sometimes clogging, but ultimately cooling. Snorgurt, the yogurt that you snort. There's an ad for you now. Ads usually pay, but this one doesn't. It's just for me. I enjoy doing a bit of an ad. So I say at the top of every podcast that we're all Egypts, and we are. Like, I am a total Egypt. And I'm thinking back over, this is the third one I've recorded. I think I'm thinking back of the other ones, and in some of them, I might even sound like I'm a bit wise or something, but like, you know, it's there at the top, the disclaimer, that I'm an Egypt. We're all Egypts. But so if I sound wise or something, it's something that I've come to a conclusion on, but it's just me. It's just my personal opinion on it. So I might be inconsistent. I definitely won't be rigorous. You remember I was talking about philosophy, and then I said at a certain point, not all ideas are inherently good or correct, or I can't remember what I said, but something like that. And my inner philosophy tutor was going, oh, you've got to pull that apart too. But I didn't, because that was my opinion. That was the bit of the podcast that was my opinion. So yeah, there'll be inconsistencies like that. I also said something in the very first podcast about, it was a throwaway thing, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. Because I said, I'm not going to be transcribing this. I'm too lazy. And I think it might have come off. Definitely it came off to me as I thought about it. Well, that might sound like I was being offhand about transcribing, but I'm not. I think it's a great idea. I just don't have the wherewithal to do it. And as in the resources, I don't know quite how it works. I don't have the time at the moment to sit down and do it myself. But I think it's a brilliant idea. So, there'll be inconsistencies. And sometimes I'll say throwaway things that don't quite hit the target of exactly what I meant, but I'll try and come back to them later and clarify. That's all I can do, because I'm an Egypt who's doing my best. That's all. You don't have to pay for this podcast. If you'd like to, there will be a Patreon, Snorgurt. Products have different names that it's hard to know how to pronounce. And I'll be talking about that later on in the podcast, because I've done a lot of ads. I work in the entertainment industry. Yes, the entertainment industry. Who knows how that works? Not me, that's for sure. It's absolutely wonderful, though. It's something I don't regret ever, even though it's been very hard of late. It seems to go in cycles. Sometimes it's hard and sometimes it flows along, is quite enjoyable. I can pay my bills as well as do work that I like, but that isn't always possible. It's not possible for too many people. But I thought I'd blow the lid off the entertainment industry. Pow! I'm going to blow the lid off it and tell you all the insider stuff, things you might not ever know. So what am I wearing for this podcast about the entertainment industry? Well, something suitably glamorous. I'm wearing the dress that Jennifer Lopez, the singer and vocal judge. She's judging one of those shows, isn't she now? Anyway, she's very, you know, very beautiful and everything. But I'm wearing the dress that she wore to the 2001 Oscars. Now, I'm not going to research this. She might not have been at the 2001 Oscars, but that I have a dress in my mind's eye. It was in all the sort of heat and all those things at the time. It's beautiful. What do I mean my mind's eye? I just have to look down. It's what I'm wearing right now. It's split to the navel. It's kind of greeny, bluey. Definitely there's lots of fronds and things on it. Chiffon or something like that. And it's split to the navel. It's still quite hot outside. So that's something that I wanted to wear to be ultra glamorous for this entertainment industry podcast. How did I get into this business they call show? Well, I wanted to be an actor. I always wanted to be an actor. I did all the school shows, did all the musicals and things like that we used to do in the convent in Kinsale. And that's something I should talk about too, my absolutely ridiculous accent. I'm from Kinsale in County Cork. When I was growing up, my mum had just come back from Canada. She'd been living there for 5 years. She emigrated. And she had just come back. So she used to say things like sweater and trash can and aluminum and stuff like that. So when I'd go into school in Kinsale, because we live just outside in the countryside, and people would say things like, I'd say, oh, could you pass my sweater? And they'd say, is it your jumper you mean? So I already had a bit of a mishmash of an accent when I was growing up. And then I went into Cork City to study English and French, but Italian and philosophy in the first year. So I was looking at languages and sociolinguistics and all of that. And that was grand because I wanted to do every drama unit that I could, because I couldn't go to drama school. There weren't really any drama schools here in Ireland at the time. And the ones in Britain were way too expensive. There'd been no way. That would have been such a pipe dream to go to an English drama college. So what I did was I did my Leaving Cert and then went to UCC and did all the drama units and all of the sociolinguistic units that I could do. So that I would, I suppose, wanted to look at behaviour, the way people speak, whatever background they're from or what informs how someone speaks. And then all the drama units are self-explanatory. And I did a brilliant course at UCC called European Drama, which had a practical element. We did shows and things. So that was all really good training. But at the end of the day, I had to move to Dublin and just start acting. I did a little bit of stage management, just started acting, started auditioning, started to learn the business on the fly. Went to a brilliant place called the Actors Workshop, Rebecca Roper, who still teaches. She taught us there. There was a lot of scene work and working with other actors one-on-one to build scenes. So that's the background. That was the sort of training element. Did whatever I could to get into it. But of course, I, like everyone else, had a perception about what acting would be. Not really showbiz. Showbiz wasn't what I was thinking about. I was thinking about acting. I was thinking about theatre acting, you know, going around the world, touring with all kinds of different people and crews and just doing all kinds of amazing parts and really getting to grips with them in rehearsals and digging into it and, oh, wearing long robes, I'm sure, running around the place holding, you know, plastic skulls. And I don't know. I don't know exactly what I thought actors did. But what I realised when I moved to Dublin was you did whatever kind of part you could get and you kept trying. And for me, early on, I learned that diversification. See, that would never fly in a voiceover. You'd have to ask the engineer to really go back quickly and delete that. Start again. Make a fool of yourself in front of the client. Snorgert. Snorgert could be sitting right there. The people from Snorgert, all with their suits going, oh, this person is not yogurt. Wait, I just don't see yogurt. But so I moved to Dublin and diversification was really important. So I did a few auditions for voice stuff because voice stuff used to pay quite well, very well often. And I would do things like I submitted a cassette tape audition for a thing called Rimini Riddle, a puppet show on RTE. And that was brilliant fun. I absolutely loved it, but I discovered I loved voice work. And I started auditioning for voiceovers, for commercials, for television, things like that. And that was brilliant because it paid. But what I learned very quickly was that my ludicrous accent had to get even more ludicrousener because it was too what they called Cork, even though it was a mad mishmash of Cork and Canada. They would say to me, could you make your accent a bit more neutral for this ad? And I would go with my sociolinguistics head on me, there's no such thing as neutral, but you can't say that to a client. You can't say that to Snorgert. You have to just do whatever Snorgert wants you to do. You're getting money to advertise their product. So, you know, when you probably haven't had money for the rest of the year until that point. So you have to do whatever Snorgert wants. You have to deliver what Snorgert demands. So I would try and make my accent more neutral, which usually meant make it sound like the other people in the room. Because to them, their own accent didn't sound like an accent. And their accent was South County Dublin at the time. I mean, I know South County Dublin has changed even since then, the last couple of decades. It's, you know, the internet, I guess, and us all having the same telly now. Not just, you know, there was RTE when I was growing up, then there was RTE 1 and 2, and then I moved to Dublin and now we all have the same channels now. But so our accents have elided a little bit. They've got a bit more like each other. But at the time, there was still a bit more of a demarcation. And so neutral is what they asked for. And neutral turned out to be South County Dublin. So I learned to do it. And because I have an okay ear, I'm not a great mimic or anything, but I had an okay ear. So that meant I could pick it up. I would practice it whenever I could. And then over time, when you have a good ear, it sort of slips into your own accent anyway. So I have lots of different elements in my accent. Then I spent 5 years in London learning to do English accents, different kinds of English and UK accents, in case they would come up on auditions or voiceovers. And then I married an American. So my accent is screwed. It hadn't a hope from the get-go to be any one thing. So my accent is lots of different things. But what that has helped with is being able to slip into lots of different characters. So I did a character on the Rimini Riddle called Leo, and he was six. He was 6 years old. So yeah, couldn't really go out too late the night before we would record that. And then played Molly, the Morbeg in Morbeg. So she sounded like this. I've talked about her in other places. So unless you'd like me to talk more about Morbegs, I'll let you have a listen for other places where I've talked about all that. But it's not really about the jobs themselves I wanted to talk. It's about keeping going. What's making it? Because I feel that, you know, quite a bit down the road, I'm still in the business. And they say that the average for an actor to stay in the business is 6 years. So I feel quite successful in my own way because I didn't get into the business for fame. I feel like still being here is success. So long as I can keep my head above water, it's not always possible, but sometimes you'll have a few more ads. Sometimes you do a lot of theatre and that doesn't pay incredibly well, but it's what my passion is. So that's when I'm happiest. So I feel like I'm doing okay. Yeah. And, you know, next year might be scary or it might be successful in terms of finance, or it might be a year I don't work very much and get a big whack of money. It's impossible to tell. But it's all about finding that balance, and it's all about finding your own voice. What is your own genre, or what is it that you would like to do? One of my biggest fears for younger people is this whole craze of being famous for famous's sake. When I was young, there was no guarantee that there'd be a career in the entertainment industry. There was no, I'm using that as a broad term, but let's say you went into comedy. Let's say you were a singer. Let's say you were an actor. There was no way of telling whether you could make a living from it. Definitely not in comedy. Not until into the 2000s, really, the late 90s, 2000s. So you really had to love what you did and find what it is that you wanted to say. And that's one of my main worries now, is when people are just saying, I'm my own brand. And I'm selling me. I'm famous. I'm well known. But there isn't an underlying skill. That always perplexes me. And I always wonder, if the attention goes away, then what's left? That always worries me for them. But maybe they have lots of other fulfilling things in their lives. I just know that I would have had to come into show business, for whatever word you want to call it, whatever discipline you're thinking of, whether it's, you know, my theatre or my writing or whatever. I had to come in with a discipline. I had to come in with something that was my work. And then the problem is, if you're being seen a lot, people think you're successful. If you're not being seen so much, although you could be working harder than you worked in years, you could be writing the best thing you've ever written, but because you're not visible, people think you've gone away. So there's a really strange thing where, even if you don't want to be famous, to a certain degree, if you're not out there and you're not being seen, maybe you're not making money. Maybe you're not able to provide for yourself. Maybe people will forget you and you have to start all over again. So it's a very strange contract to have with the world. But I would always prefer to come from a background of doing something I loved. And then if it takes off and you manage to make it pay, or you do another element of it, like you do commercials, or you do, you write a newspaper column, or you find another way within your skill set to keep going, to keep your head above water. And then hopefully you can make the stuff that you want to make and the things that you want to say. Because otherwise it's a popularity competition, and those are terrifying. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if everything's based on being popular? How scary that is. It's it can always go away, or people can shift. People can look at what happened to me on Twitter lately. There were people who just decided to take a certain slanted view of things and not listen when I said, hey, I'm just going to do jokes and cat videos again. They decided, no, that's not what you do here. We're going to make sure that you didn't mention Irish water today or homelessness. Kill her. Yeah. So, yeah, popularity is fickle. You're always going to be in and out of fashion. Look at my own career in voice work. So in the late 90s, early 2000s, I was doing pretty much every ad or every bit of animation or every bit of voice work going. It was my moment of popularity in voice work. Of course, that wanes. That, you know, it goes in cycles anyway. One year you're in, one year you're out. And then at a certain point, there's a whole new crop of people and they're going to use them. So what if you don't have other stuff to fall back on? It's pretty terrifying. Popularity is not something to lean on. Yeah, try and find something else. If you do want to come into this business, try and find something else. The other thing is people perceive your popularity in a certain way. I'll never forget when I wrote my first book and it became a bestseller, and that was really wonderful. You know, we worked really hard at it, myself and the publisher, and made sure it was a really good, solid, fun package, easy to read, good for the Christmas market, which is what it was destined for. Did all the publicity we could and it sold. It worked. Thank goodness it worked. It's out of print now, but it worked. But as soon as it was in the bestseller list, I was getting messages from people I don't know asking for money. And I don't know if you know this, but if you have a book that is a bestseller in Ireland, you could have several bestsellers in a row in Ireland, and you're not even making enough to pay your mortgage for the year. Maybe not even for a couple of months. It depends. Irish advances can be very, very low. And then what you're doing as the book goes on sale is you're only getting a percentage out of every book sale, which goes back to your advance. Loads of people have written about this lately, and it's really worth checking out. But when you've got amazing writers, people like Donal Ryan, people, multi-award winners, people with the most beautiful work ever, selling really well, and they're still working as teachers or whatever else it is, they're still diversification, like I couldn't pronounce earlier. You know, people need to realize that just because something is popular or out there, it doesn't mean that it's making money for the person that's involved. So it's still a labor of love in a way. It's a wonderful thing to have a book out. What an incredible thing. And mine is out at the moment, Raging. Please buy it if you'd like. And don't if you don't like. There are libraries. You can go and get it there. I'd love you to read it though, because that's the one thing I do, write or make these podcasts or whatever it is I do. I do want to share the work. So if you'd like to share it too, that would be great. Where was I? I was talking about, that popularity doesn't necessarily mean that you're making money. And the other thing is, at a time where you're selling your book, you're promoting it, you'll never be more visible than when you're promoting a book or a show or an exhibition, if you're an artist or whatever it is. You'll never be more visible than that. But you're not getting paid for those appearances. They're all for free. Let's say I'm going on telly to promote something. I might have to pay to get my hair done, because when I walk in, they say, oh, look at your hair. It's so fluffy and frizzy. It can't be. So they'll either straighten it all themselves so I look like someone else completely, or they just frown at me. And I can't bear that. So I'll pay to have the hair done. And they'll probably still straighten it when I get there.
Hey, Derek here.
And Gerodian here from the Motherfucker podcast.
We just want to tell you about the Dublin Podcast Festival, which is coming this autumn.
We're going to be doing a live show at the Sugar Club on the 10th of October.
We're going to do an hour-long special on satire from the old medieval times up to the present day.
And we're going to be doing a collaboration with the Irish History Podcast.
They're going to be there too, so we're going to have a lot of fun. You can buy tickets now at Ticketmaster.
Oh, right.
Or yes, or even look up dublinpodcastfestival.ie.
Will you be joined by some of your Mother Folklore regulars, such as myself and Emer Duffy?
And Patter.
Oh yeah, okay, that guy as well.
That guy as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun and we can't wait to see you there.
Moving on from the fact that just because you're visible when you're promoting something doesn't mean that's when you're earning. Self-deprecation there. I wanted to talk about that a tiny bit, just to pop off topic for a second. Because if you've seen Hannah Gadsby's incredible Nanette, her comedy special, which isn't that funny in a way, it's beautifully, I mean, there are beautiful jokes. I'm not saying it's not funny, but I'm saying it gets quite serious, which is really wonderful to see, to have that space for her to carve that space for herself to do that. She talks about self-deprecation and she says that it's not humility, it's humiliation. And I think that's a great point. I use self-deprecation a lot, but I really want to mark when it is me afraid to own something that's good and go, oh, no, it's terrible. No, oh, no, I'm shite. Because if I thought I was shite, I wouldn't put work out there. If I thought this podcast was shite, I wouldn't put it up. I'd delete it. I've deleted some. Yeah, these are the good ones, folks. But honestly, I do want things to be the best they can be. And I wouldn't put them out if I couldn't stand over them. I go over and edit everything I do for sale, like a book, something like that. I love improv because that is just opening the top of my head and letting you see inside my brain. I do a little bit of improv maybe at the end of this podcast. But that's different. When it's a finished product, I want to have it as polished as possible. And self-deprecation for me isn't about saying, I'm terrible, sure I'm awful, sure my hair is awful. It's me saying, maybe today isn't a good hair day. You know, of course I curate Instagram or I used to curate tweets or you know, I don't want to show you me in the flitters or in the shite the whole time. I want to show you, you know, give a little bit of light or a little bit of joy or a little bit of crack, like I'm having a good day today. Woohoo! I want to share that. Every now and again, though, I'll share the opposite because it's not just about self-deprecation. It's about really letting people in. And I think vulnerability and realizing that other people are vulnerable and no matter how positive they are and no matter how hard they're working, they might not necessarily be having a good day. And not just not a good day, they might actually be struggling. We don't know people struggle. And we have to, I think that's partly down to we don't share it often enough. And I think we must share it. So sometimes I might, you know, I might just let you, and I'm not blowing the lid off the entertainment industry, I might just let you into what's happening. But hopefully we'll have some crack. I've got an idea for a couple of very crack, mad episodes of this. Back to the whole financial aspect. There is not one person that I know who sells only in Ireland. So actors, writers, if they haven't had that lucky break outside of Ireland, there's not one person I know that isn't doing other stuff to keep their head above water and keep working within that discipline. There are a few I know who've had international success and they are, some of them can be wealthy, some of them can be very well known but not so wealthy, but at least they're able to generate more work because of their being well known. It has a knock-on effect. But don't assume when you see people in the public eye that they're necessarily A, having a great time, B, that their next job is guaranteed, or C, that they're wealthy. I got people writing to me, people I don't even know, asking me to go in on business with them in shops and things. And I was like, with what? With what, sir? I don't know you. Also, first, I don't know you. So cheeky. And I don't have that kind of money. You can't make something go viral. That's one thing that I've taken heart in recently, that if something goes viral, be it a tweet or a video or whatever, it's because it's captured the imagination. And that's kind of what I'd like to happen with this podcast is if it starts small and grows, that's the way I'd love it to be. I don't want to be a flash in the pan. I would rather, like I say, I'd rather still be around in years to come. I'd rather still be making work. And when Racist B&B or Armageddon or any of those videos that I did on YouTube, when some of them went viral, though they weren't in the millions or anything, it was just that, again, within Ireland, basically, it took off in that limited way, but still very grateful for every click. Even the horrible racist comments. Thanks for watching, lads. Thanks for the clicks, dudes. But you can't make that happen. And there's something in that kind of a growing audience, reaching that true audience, being yourself, saying what you want to say and finding that true audience. That's something that's worth something to me. I want to work hard, but I don't really want... Fame has never really interested me. I am fascinated by the young people who want to be famous, Insta famous or Twitter famous. I'm fascinated by that. And I suppose in a minor way, I was Twitter famous. I had more followers there than I could ever hope to get in a stadium. But I was still really grateful for every one of them who came very slowly over time and checked out what I had to say. you're endowed, I think, by other people with listenability or whatever it is. But you have to be careful if you're ever put on a pedestal, because that can always be taken away. So I think a slow burner, a slow grower, that's what we want. That's what we want. We want to be around for a while, you know, like, I don't know, like ABBA, maybe. Yeah, I got a couple of corporations asking me when the videos went viral to make something viral for them. And I just went, I don't think you understand. A, I can't be making the kind of work that I make for myself, for you. And B, you can't make that happen. You can't. So there's no point getting jealous if something goes viral. There's no point getting jealous of someone else's clicks, because that just sort of happens and it might go away. So never be jealous of other people's success or whatever you perceive as success. Hating someone because something is happening for them right now is absolutely pointless. And then there's rejection. Rejection is never fun. You always feel like a tiny heel, especially if you're really looking forward to a job or you really, really need it at the time. You go up for this job, or you could be developing an idea and you pitch the idea or you do the audition and you feel really great about it. You've done your best, or maybe you feel like you haven't done your best and you're kicking yourself. But either way, whatever is the reason, maybe you just weren't right for it, or they wanted to cast one of their friends, or somebody else came up with a similar idea the year before. You're rejected. You're told no, and your project or your part are dead in the water. What do? I know I go and cry for about a week. It never gets easier. And nerves. They're so much part of it. I don't know anyone who is sure of themselves, even though you've done your best, you want it to be great, but you don't know what people are going to say. So you have to just know that you have done your best and move on. Even though you'll have puffy eyes and you'll be, you know, yeah, won't want to see anyone for a while. No, that's, I'm overreacting there. I'm over-egging it. But sometimes it really feels bad, especially if you've needed the gig. And that's part of this business we call show. That's part of publishing or anything like that. So when you see people working or happy about it or celebrating the fact that they are, realize that there's an awful lot more going on behind the scenes. And sure, we all have to put up with reviews, even if we're not out in the public realm. People now have an opinion on everything we do. So we have to just take that on the chin, to a certain extent, but also we can pull back. I feel like it might be the time to pull back and say, do we need to have an opinion on everything that people do? Have an opinion on someone's work if they're putting it out there. Absolutely, do that. But you don't have to have an opinion on every single thing that other people put up. Just because it's out there, it doesn't mean, I've said this before, I'll probably say it again. Again, I'm a human, not only a human, I'm an Egypt human. So please, please, Give yourselves a break. I will be inconsistent sometimes and I will fuck up. Yay! That's the whole joy of life, fucking up. And it doesn't actually harm anybody else. It's when it harms someone else that it's a problem. But hopefully we've time to change. Jesus, the stuff I was doing on stage 10 years ago, though it wasn't quite, you know, yeah, women are all terrible. We're so terrible. We're awful. But it probably wasn't far off. There was probably a lot of internalized misogyny there. How could I not grow up without some internalized misogyny? They were putting people in Magdalene laundries when I was into my 20s. So how could I not grow up with some of it? But there was stuff that I did. Oh, that I'm glad that I have an opportunity to move on from now. It was, and I'll talk about internalized misogyny at another point. But yeah. You know, has Me Too gone too far? Yes, women are awful. We're always lying. Such bitches. No, lads. I've been looking at some of the Edinburgh Fringe reviews, and while I do miss the Fringe, I kind of wish I was there. You sort of feel like you're missing out. A terrible Fringe FOMO. But what I'm not missing is the fact that this year in particular, we were speaking about reviews, but a lot of the reviewers seem really tired. I think it's either time for new reviewers or for the reviewers to all swap. That often happens during the Fringe anyway. The person who usually reviews apple tarts will come and review comedy, especially if you're not a big name. So you get reviews saying things like, I liked the performance, but there wasn't enough crust. So it's a very strange thing. You need to put out reviews as a kind of marketing. I think I said this before, but you need to share them if they're good. If they're bad, you need to get past them. So it's, for me, it's best not to check them out at all unless a publicist asks me to share it. But it's sort of like targeted advertising. Did you like this critic's review of something else? Well, then you like this show. Oh, targeted advertising has changed. Before I deleted Facebook, I'd noticed that as I advance in years, let's say, it went from, hey, why don't you check out this workout gear, to, would you like afternoon tea at the blah, blah, blah hotel? And it was terribly insulting. Not that there's anything wrong with afternoon tea. Afternoon tea is brilliant. Knock yourselves out. Please go and eat some right now. But it was the targeting. It was, you'd want to be slowing down there a bit, Nana. Put down that workout top and go and have a cream bun. And I've, because as someone who has done some advertising in my life, I feel like I'm part of an industry now that's built to cut me down. Hang on now. While I flip this around, do you remember I was asking you for listeners' ludicrous statements and maybe some conspiracy theories? Well, I have some ludicrous statements, but the only ludicrous statements that have come in so far, there have been lots of conspiracy theories and things, are facts about pigeons. This is from someone called Jess. She's Pigeon Facts on Twitter. She says, during the Neolithic age, pigeons were tethered by their feet to standing stones and used to tell the time by their position in relation to the sun. Now, that's terrifying. I know that we, you know, used to bop each other on the heads the whole time and, you know, sex wasn't exactly tender and things during the Neolithic age, but pigeons tethered by their feet to standing stones. Why couldn't you use the standing stones? Oh, I see. They would move around to get in or out of the sun, I presume. That's positively barbaric. I feel very sorry for the pigeons. That's not just a ludicrous statement. That's a horrendous fact. Now, maybe there's room for horrendous facts on this podcast, but that's definitely pretty terrifying. The Queen of England has over 400 taxidermy pigeons in her private quarters. Private quarters, I hope you mean like back rooms and not up her royalness. Pigeons can only stay airborne for 90 seconds. I don't believe it. I don't believe it, Jess. That can't be true. Surely they can soar. Surely they can... Surely they're not just basically humans with a tiny bit of get up and go. Otherwise, it's just walking. I feel sorry for pigeons now. And wait, the last one. Pigeons have no perception of the colour yellow. Neither do I, really. I used to have a yellow... Part of the uniform was a yellow sweater. See, sweater. Is it your jumper, you mean? I used to have a yellow sweater as part and then a navy blue gym slip. That was the convent primary school colours. And yellow was so... It used to make me look so washed out and everyone looked unhealthy, basically. Everyone looked unhealthy in yellow. There's very few yellows that can make you look good if you are a pale white person, especially in the winter when you're so drawn and pasty, then... Yeah, it's yellow's not a good colour for us. So I've blocked out my perception of the colour yellow. If that makes me a pigeon, so be it. So be it. We have some other conspiracy theories now for you. That was ludicrous statements. Though it wasn't really. That was more facts, Jess. But thank you. Thank you for writing in. Write in to tara@taraflynn.ie and I'll deal with those as best I can. So here, Australia is an urban myth, says Max. Hi, Max. Australia is an urban myth. Yeah, I'd go with that. I've been a couple of times, but it is an urban myth. There's no way you can get that much juice in any real place. Their teeth are just too white. I mean, check out Australian Love Island. Check out Australian Love Island and you'll see that Australia has to be an urban myth. There's no way people can be that athletic with teeth that white, with that, you know, keen availability of juice and be real. There's just no way. It's not possible. So... And no, there's no way that any continent could survive all those poisonous animals and still be real. So yeah, I'll go with that, Max. I think you're right. Bella says that the world is flat, which it is. Exactly, Bella. It is. The world is flat. It is. That's why they refer to the Iron Age It was smoothed out during the Iron Age. It used to be a lot hillier. It's definitely flatter by comparison than it used to be. But the world is flat. Otherwise, how would marbles be able to roll without sticking? There's your proof. There is your proof. Stephen says wasps have been created by bees to get bees better PR. Now, I'd love if this were true. I just think wasps are assholes. I once went out with a guy, he was quite a hippie, and I said, wasps are awful idiots. I said something like what Stephen said there, wasps have been created by bees to get bees better PR. I wish that's what I'd said, it wasn't that clever. I said, oh, wasps are so annoying, do they have any redeeming qualities? And he said, how could you speak about my friends, the wasps, that way? How could you speak about them that way? I had a picnic the other day with some friends and my friends, the wasps, arrived. And I said, oh, hello, my friends, the wasps. But I think he lived on a commune at some point, and I'm just not sure things came out quite right the other end. Anyway, wasps have been, yes, Stephen, I'm going to go with that. Wasps have been created by bees to get bees better PR. Bees, as we know, are incredibly clever, and we're not going to survive without them. So they know that. We don't seem to. So while the US is investing in pesticides that could kill bees, into research that allows going to allow that to happen again, because I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, we are not getting the point. So bees have been as busy as themselves, and they have been creating wasps to so that they, even though they've got stingers and things like that, so they get a bad rap sometimes, bees do. They only sting once in their lives. They make honey. They're saving the planet by pollinating everything. People kind of get afraid of bees the same as wasps. Bees know this, and so they have in their bee laboratories, they have created these horrible little irredeemable characters called wasps. And I think you'll agree it's driven a lot of bee traffic. Definitely driven me a lot more pro-bee. Wendy says, hi, Wendy. She says, I have no friends. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's just an outright lie, you fool. I'm your friend. I'm your friend, Wendy, as well, you know. So, one more before I let you go with a Flinspiring. The people of Kerry keep replacing Fungi the dolphin. Not the same dolphin. This is Suzanne Kane. Now, this often comes up on her podcast. She does with PJ Gallagher. This is her own podcast, Fodder. And I think she's trying to cross-pollinate like a big old bee, a very beautiful bee that she is. But she's trying to cross-pollinate because she really believes this. The people of Kerry keep replacing Fungi the dolphin. This comes up on the Dubland podcast. Do check it out. But you see, I don't think it's necessarily that the people of Kerry are doing it. I think that it isn't the same dolphin. I think you're right. I think it's the same dolphin costume. I think that it's the happy pair twins. I think they're swimming to Kerry every night, doing some Fungi action, and then coming back to Greystones Beach, where they'll take their sunrise photos and provide delicious, delicious vegan treats. Now, how is that more outlandish? That's just a fact. The thing is, you always see them doing those daily swims, and they even go out in inclement weather, and people think they're going into the sea in the morning, but they're not. They're not. They're coming out. They want to promote tourism and well-being all around Ireland. So they go to Kerry, even though Fungi's long gone. There's no dolphin that could be around that long, particularly not in the media. This is the showbiz industry Fungi. No one lasts that long except maybe ABBA and maybe me and maybe the podcast. But the happy pair twins are performing as Fungi and then swimming back and still getting in a full day's work in their cafes. What do you make of them apples? As ever, as we come to the end of the podcast, I would like to finish with a Flinspiring quote. You're a Flinspiration. Be as disappointed in everyone else as you are in yourself. You see, that's not just self-deprecation. We're all a bit disappointed in ourselves sometimes. We're inconsistent, we're human, we're an idiot like I am. We have fuzzy, fluffy hair that TV makeup people do not like. So be as disappointed in everyone else as you are in yourself. Give yourself a break. Thank you, fellow idiots. See you soon.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.